Welcome to the Ethical Consumer Podcast. I'm your host, Julia Abbott. Join me for weekly chats with food and beverage brands, because caring about the process behind your food should be just as important as enjoying it. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Ethical Consumer Podcast. I'm your host, Julia, and joining with me today are Finnegan Farms co-founders Amanda and Claire. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, for sure.
Yeah, so exciting.
Most definitely. Yay! So you guys are a dynamic sister duo, and you're actually in the same room right now, but I have you on two different screens. So those of you who are watching this on YouTube, they're right next to each other. So if one of them looks to the side, they are in the same room, but you get to see their beautiful faces in two different boxes. So, Finnegan's Farms, your motto is grow, teach, and build. Yep. And we will be talking about each one of those individually throughout the episode. But first, how did you come to found Finnegan's Farms? And I guess prior to that, what were your lives like that led you to have a passion for growing, teaching, and building? Whoever wants to go first.
We were so hungry.
Yeah, we were really hungry one day, and we said, you know what, let's start. No. Okay, so my name is Amanda, and that's who's talking. But I originally came to the idea of Finnegan's Farms through my own research, I would say. Mm-hmm. So I originally went to school, studied biology, chemistry, African-American culture. And I was pretty much set on going to medical school because I wanted to do infectious disease and epidemiology, all of that. And so I was like, all right, well, maybe I should do a master's program in between since I want to take a gap year. And so during that time, I actually spent some time doing some research over at Johns Hopkins. And then I happened upon this program over at Georgetown. And that was really cool because it was really focused on defense. But I specifically was there to study agricultural defense and like how all of the different things that we focus on as the United States in order to keep the United States safe, how that plays into safe and sustainable agriculture. So I was in school and I was like, you know what? This is really cool, but I think this would really work on a larger scale. Like maybe we could start by just like giving people backyard gardens or things like that, because we really focused on food security and food insecurity. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much just like my passions from that melded with my education. And I called Clarissa one day. I think I was probably in DC at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, we should start a business.
I was like, okay.
When did we start?
I love it.
It was that mostly I just had was coming together with these two big ideas of like, okay, we look at defense and we look at protecting the United States, but something that's a big crisis that's happening in the United States and around the world is just hunger, period.
Yeah.
So like, how do we start to help people with their most basic needs? And you know, that's kind of how we came to it. But I really did come to Clarissa too, because she does have a whole background in healthcare administration. Yeah. I was like, I don't know anything about hiring people and I need help.
And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, so I guess from like my perspective, you know, Amanda's always saving the world. So whenever she comes to me and says like, hey, we need to do this, I'm always on board, usually something insane. But I was like, let's do it. I called Dylan. I'm like, Amanda wants to start a business and it's supposed to be, you know, about food. We're going to save the world. We're going to feed everyone. He's like, okay, great. Where do I need to be? And we're like, I don't know. She just said, get on board. I'm like, okay, we're on board. So like,
I love that.
A whole ton from Amanda. And she caught me with the whole food thing. As soon as she was like, feed, I was like, me, everybody, feed everyone. I'm involved. Let's do it. Let's throw some stuff. I'm ready to eat. You're ready to eat. Let's do it. So I think that's like my biggest motivation.
Food. I am motivated by food. You know. Yes, please.
Yeah, I will say that having Clarissa, having Dylan, the two of them have been really, really helpful they've been really instrumental in keeping me on track, because I am definitely the person that's like, okay, guys, 10 years from now, this is what it's going to look like. And they're like, okay, so what do we do tomorrow, though?
Right. Okay. Definitely my dreamer. She's a dreamer. She brings, like, the big picture of everything, and I'm going to be, like, realist of how we actually do that. So I kind of tether her a little bit. Dylan is, like, the builder. So whenever Amanda asks, he creates it. And then between the two, being to the, like, creative two, I have to tether them and get realistic.
But it doesn't work without the team, so.
Yeah.
I love it.
Very supportive. Because it really just started, I was like, do you think it's possible for us to just start putting gardens in people's backyards? Like, is that a thing? And she was like, well, you should probably ask them first. But I was like, yeah, I think we should just start giving people gardens and start teaching people how to grow food and teaching people that they can be self-sufficient. And she was like, all right, let's go for it.
We did. And we started staking out backyards. We actually targeted people who had already gardened, or like gardens that were already like needed refurbishing, and we would go to them and say like, hey, your garden is looking pretty thick. You need some help? And like tell them like what we do and everything. But that's actually how we started taking off the same thing with the whole pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. So this has been kind of a recent endeavor. When did you guys start building Fennigan's Farms as we know it today?
So let's see. I founded Fennigan's Farms in October of 2019. So we just celebrated our first birthday. But I'll yes, thank you. Yay. Our first official build was just a series of like backyard gardens. And so that happened really this summer. It really took off when people were just like, yes, please come help my dilapidated garden. Or, you know, our motto is like, though it is an LLC, we have decided to not immediately take income from Fennigan's Farms. And so everything that we make gets cycled right back into what we're doing. And so the very first like rendition of Fennigan's Farms essentially was like, you build a garden with us and we donate a garden to someone else. And so that was kind of how it started. It was like, okay, but we could make this bigger, right? We could build a farmer's market. We could help with community gardens. We could help with this. We could help with that. And that's kind of how it took off a lot more, because we were like, it's not about us trying to find like a market for people who want to build gardens, right? It's not just about that. It's about giving people food on their plates. And we just needed to be able to kind of fund that mission. And we just found a lot of people who needed help with their gardens. And we're like, hey, well, you know, we'll give you this amount to do this or this amount to do this. And we were like, perfect. That's all we needed to go buy these supplies to set something up for somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
I love that. It's like, you know, it already is, but even in its true sense, kind of like the buy one and give one kind of programs that you would see with Tom's or Bombas or like, you know, all of the millennial Instagram goodness. That's like, you know that you're supporting a good cause at the same time. Like here, I'm buying something and I also know they're going to give a pair of shoes to someone else or give a pair of socks to someone else. Right. And it's wonderful because you get to get, you know, your garden redone and you guys are killing it. And then someone else gets a garden built for them too. Like, That's just got to be one of the best feelings. I always like things like that where I know that the reciprocity is helping elsewhere too. Mm-hmm. That's a good feeling. So you guys are based in, are you in or just outside of Detroit?
We're just outside of Detroit. That's where our homestead just is outside. Located right now. Yep. But our major projects are happening in and around Detroit right now.
Okay. Excellent. What would you say? So initially it kind of started out with you reforming some people's gardens that were doing fine, but could use a little help. It's kind of evolved now into, or working on starting to evolve. Again, pandemic makes everything a little bit more complicated for sure. Yeah. But you have your pillars, your grow, teach, and build. You've started a YouTube channel and a wonderful informative blog that you're sharing things on as well.
Yay, someone's reading it.
I did. Have you been able to teach much in person? You've pivoted successfully being online, but have you been able to do the teaching in person portion?
No, not really.
Nah.
Nope. Sure. We shut that
down. Yeah.
I mean, there are some things that can be done outside, right? Like, if mm-hmm. I'm coming over to help you install a hoop house, that can happen outside. I hope it happens outside. But there's other things that we can't quite do anymore. So, like, we have one of our cooking classes. Like, we have a number of classes that are available online. One of them is, like, date night dining, where we teach you how to make, like, little chocolates, you and your partner, and or making homemade pasta, or how to store your harvest, or how to put it up, essentially, for the winter, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We teach those all virtually now.
Okay. I see you had a, was it, I don't remember if it was it canning or pickling, but a preservation method so that you could have and save your fresh food, your fresh produce past its natural expiration date and into the winter.
Yeah. So we have canning, freezing, blanching, all of that. So we teach you those basic techniques just so, you know, if you just grew all of this stuff all summer and you're like, wow, I have a whole lot of food that I need to do something. We just think a lot about, like, in our programming, we like to kind of call in a lot of African-American agricultural pioneers. And so one of those really, really important people to us is Fannie Lou Hamer. And one of the things that she advocated for was having a homestead and having the ability to preserve your food, because it's like, okay, if something happens and I'm out here fighting for my rights, if they cut off my food supply, what do I do? It's like, you can cut off my food supply if you want to. I have a garden and I know how to can. So I'm not going to stop speaking out, because what are you going to do to me? And so, like, that is ultimate power we feel. And that's what we want to give to people, which is why we teach a lot of these classes.
I love that. That's excellent. And just having, I know part of your pillars, one of your pillars even not said in your three-part motto is making sure that food stays accessible and affordable. Like you said, starting out, you wanted to save the world and feed everybody. Like everybody.
everybody come. You need to fill your belly. Walk this way.
Right?
Amanda's got you. Claire's got you.
Absolutely.
Where did that passion come from, that desire to feed everybody? I'm assuming you saw a need somewhere.
You know, honestly, we just kind of grew up like that. We, like, we're raised in kind of the service mindset. And, like, once a week, we always have this big family dinner, and everybody is welcome. So it doesn't have to just be family. It can be neighbors. It can be friends. That's how I fed all my friends through college. We had some people come over with us. Because we had food, they knew we had food, so they came over and, like, had a full meal with us. So we just have grown up that way. Mm-hmm. My mother is like that. Her love language is just to, like, cook and bake and give to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we just grew up. You know, if somebody is hungry, that does not sit well with me. So,
yeah, you're not sure. My house without some food,
you know, and if you need whatever, we have it. We grew it, we canned it, here you go, you're good for the winter. So we've just grown up with that mindset.
Excellent. That, I mean, clearly it's imparted so much passion and care and love into who you guys are as human beings. As Amanda, I talked to you briefly before this call too, just to kind of, like, sort all of our stuff out and make sure I had the information that I needed and you knew who I was. I wasn't some stranger from the internet.
Yeah, that alone could and, have probably been a podcast.
Right?
Just, like, hanging out.
We dug in. It was good. But, I mean, just with you, your passion for this is obvious, and the way you post on social media. You just had one that I really, really liked. It was, let's see. I can look it up. Got my phone right here.
I'm always telling you, like, people are reading this. See? Yes.
It's actually pretty
crazy. Here we go.
Just, like, every time I post something, I'm like, all right. And then someone will say, wow, I really like that. And I'll go and tell her. I'm like, girl, look. And she's like, yeah.
They liked my thing. Yes. Like and share, guys. Like, if you're looking for ways to support, you know, small businesses or startups or new projects, like and share and let them know that they are, what they're having to say is heard and wanted. I just got goosebumps and valued because it feels good. Like being on the other end of things, like knowing people are appreciating what you're doing, like that just lights a fire that is incomparable, I think. So the beautiful post, the right to food protects the right of all human beings to live in dignity, free from hunger, food insecurity, and malnutrition. The right to food is not about charity, but about ensuring that all people have the capacity to feed themselves in dignity.
Absolutely. Ooh. I know that they get you right, Jill.
It does. It does. I read that. I'm like, ooh, what did they post? I'm having them on in like 45. Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's.
Yes.
That was actually given to us. That is the global framework that I like to look at food security on, because mm-hmm. that's actually a message that was put out by the United Nations in what they consider mm-hmm. to be being food secure, having the right to food. So like people talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like your most basic needs is eating, right? So like having mm-hmm. shelter, having being safe and having some food, clean water, things like that. Those are things that are ours by birthright. And there are people who are living life as if that's something that they are not allowed to have. There's people who live in food opulence while others live in the worst kinds of food insecurity, some food insecurity that you can't even imagine, right? Yeah. And so like, even if we're living in a world, I believe, and I know Claire believes, and Finnegan's Farms believes, if we're living in a world where we can play with our food, we can get creative with our food, we can use food as a $9 billion industry, right? We can create food waste, then we mm-hmm. can feed everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's how I feel. Yes. You know, it's just like, we can really get to it. And the solution, a lot of people are like, wow, these women are on here and they're probably very ambitious for trying to feed the entire world. I actually don't think that that's very ambitious at all.
It's like so achievable. It's so easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we can put our egos aside and really humble ourselves and think about how people eat, what they need to eat, things like that, and think critically, if we can come together, I like to call it critical collaborative thinking. So if we can come together and do that, we can solve any problem, right? I feel like every other problem that we wanted to solve in history thus far, we figured it out. And mm-hmm. this is a problem that's a violation of human rights. We should all be able to eat. We should all have consistent access to food. We should all have consistent access to affordable food. Yeah. It's just kind of like, it's 2020, y'all. Right? What are we doing?
You'd think we would have figured it out by now.
And I think this is one of those situations where it's like, we have figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
But it's not been implemented, or it hasn't been the implemented. System currently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, we know what to do. We know how to put food mm-hmm. in place. And so that's kind of not even kind of that is our mission, because we know that it's doable. And my thing is like, I started Finnegan's Farms with a grad school salary. You can't even call it a salary. so you know, I'm over here trying to feed people on like $5.
Oh my rice in our pocket.
Right? You know, I'm over here eating ramen noodles so I can make sure that other people have food on their plates. You understand? So it's like, we could definitely do it. The right people just need to be in the right spaces, and the right people just need to be they need to be in the right spaces to have other people to listen to them, so they can mm-hmm. say like, no, this is actually a solution that I already came up with. And if we did this, 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 and this, and we come together on it, we could actually make a meaningful difference, a meaningful mm-hmm. impact here. Yeah. So that's kind of like, it gets a little, you can probably sense the passion coming now where I'm just like, we could really be doing this. It just feels, at this point, it just feels like an unnecessary thing to have this many people this hungry all around the United States, all around the world.
when it's
your passion and your anger is 100% valid, especially because I know that you and your friends, like you have lived this and you have grown up just outside of Detroit, seeing difficulties, seeing poverty, seeing food. And we'll get to that in a second, food desert versus food apartheid too, and explaining the difference between those things, which is a word you taught me. I had not heard of food apartheid until I talked to you like a week or two ago. And my friend Audrey, I had her on for a Farming for Public Health episode. She works in more of a public health sort of sector, with, you know, the food that's grown in Iowa specifically. We had in Detroit, Michigan, also Midwest, we have a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans, a lot of wheat. Like, yeah, we're growing all of those cash crops and all of the stuff that's used to make all of those crops hearty and last and bountiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not staying here.
Yeah.
It's going elsewhere, but we're getting all of the nasties that go in the soil and the water and the air. And she had told me while we were on the episode, and my heart kind of fell, and it was a big realization for me just growing up the way I grew up, that calorically, we have plenty of food to feed everybody. Calorically, it's there. It's the distribution that's messed up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's that. Frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, it was kind of a really odd experience. I know we talked a little bit beforehand just about, like, okay, what was that transition like, trying to go from, okay, working in a space that's really supposed to be more government centric to working to something that's going to be way more community centric. And that was actually a really big transition for me because of everything I had done up until that point, right, had prepared me for a very corporate kind of world. And it was very much so like, you know, I'm wearing a suit every day, and I'm not, you know, I'm not getting up to really go and like play in the dirt or do anything like that. I'm getting up to look at policy. I'm getting up to look at land stewardship amongst farmers. I'm getting up to look at how we're looking at our soil and soil amendments and all of those things. I'm looking at it from a paperwork perspective. So that's kind of how I started everything out. It was very different from what we're doing now, just because we were so focused on, I don't even want to just, I should say, we were very much so still in a capitalistic mindset, because that's what you're taught. Like, you grow up in that, like, you go to work 40 hours a week, you come home, I don't know what you do when you come home, some form of relaxation, and then you get up and you do it all over again the next day. And so kind of like, how do we continue to put meaningful effort towards this and not run ourselves into the ground? That was kind of like our first, like, challenge. But we grew up in the city of Detroit, and we did see firsthand, like, food apartheid, food desert. We saw all kinds of things. In fact, one of the last blogs I wrote about was actually the very first time I experienced going to a different supermarket that didn't have the kind of produce that was at the market right down the street from me. And so, yeah, we, like you mentioned, we experienced a lot of this stuff firsthand. And we, I guess you'd say, grew up, we're just like, this is something that is, like, we basically understood that this was a system that was created, and it was doing its job, keeping certain people excluded and certain people in the loop. And, you know, that's kind of how we, I kind of brought up more so of, like, that transition, just because I'm like, we came into it from the other side, not really thinking that hard about it. But then after taking our personal experiences and melding that together, we were like, yeah, no, we kind of have to move away from having this work, 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 work all the time. And if we are going to work that hard, what are we putting it into? And if that means that we're going to put it into just getting food on plates, then why not? So, yeah. So we saw it, kind of grew up seeing it from one perspective, went to school, saw it from a whole different perspective. And now we're kind of back like, no, guys, we've seen the other side. We've seen the corporate side. There's a way to do this. They have the money.
I've been there. It exists.
Having to learn about just like food distribution systems and learning from it from every aspect, from people who are laboring for our food to people who distribute our food to people who grow the food to people who eat the food. So I saw all of that and was just like, not that I want to burn this whole system down or anything like that. It was more of a, wow, there are some gaps here and there's some serious mm-hmm. changes that can be made.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going at it from both sides, too. You're not only going at it through perhaps not policy at this point in time, but education
yeah.
and awareness that this is an issue. And then also working on the other side of it, knowing that this is currently a systemic problem and feeding people on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know, in my opinion, that's how we end up meeting in the middle, where the system gets broken down, modified, and fixed, mm-hmm. and where the food insecurity is also improved at the same time. And hopefully, at some point, we're going to mesh in the middle if there's work from both sides and all sides. It's not just a two-sided problem of mm-hmm. not having food and having distribution be messed up. I mean, there's so many other things to consider at the same
right?
time.
It definitely deserves a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Oh, man. No, your passion is beautiful, and I love it. And I'm, like, excited at the same time. I actually messaged a friend of mine. She works for Food Corps, which is kind of a subset of AmeriCorps. And she works in the school system. And I remember her saying at one point, I had mentioned volunteering at a food shelter in town and a food bank, pardon me. I mentioned that it did make me a little bit sad at the time. And this is close to 15 years ago or so. That makes me feel old. I don't like that. But yes, I was volunteering about 15 years ago, man. And, you know, I was happy to be volunteering, packing these bags and making a difference. But then it made me a little bit sad from my extremely privileged growing up of not having food insecurity at all. I did not experience that, to know that, you know, I was packing these bags of chips and cans of peaches and things like that that I would not have necessarily deemed the most nutritious or mm-hmm. well-rounded amount of food, but that's what they got in that week. That's yeah. what they had. So that is what people received. And I mentioned that. She's like, well, they can do a lot more consumer packaged goods because some people do not have refrigerators yeah. and freezers. And we were camping, and I remember where I was sitting, and I remember viscerally, like, what I felt to not have understood that around my area, that is a difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not sit well.
Yeah.
And this is several months ago. And that was baffling to me, to have not grown up with that understanding and to now have that understanding. I asked, girl, what can I do? Like, what can I do? What can we do? And what yeah. is being done? And it is to feed people, and it is to find the community gardens that are giving back and giving people those tools to grow their own food. And that was a huge tangent, but that is just something that I think on the education side, you're not aware of it until you're made aware of it. And you guys are educating people on the fact that this is a huge problem.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
You're fixing it on the other side, too. And there's my emotional ramble of being upset.
No,
but
I think
but knowing that people are there to do good and fix it and help. And it's there's some salvaging in that, I suppose. Yeah. You know, it's going to get better.
Well, yeah, I think, go ahead.
What's up?
I bet. Oh, you have a good point. You said it didn't sit well with you, and it absolutely shouldn't sit well with
Mm-mm.
you. You know, like, when I look at people and if I had been there and someone, right, like, and experienced that with you, and you had a completely different reaction, and you were just like, so what if they don't have a fridge? So what if they don't have a
stove?
So what if they don't have electricity or
right,
heat or anything like that to keep those things running? That's not my problem, mm-hmm. right? And there's a lot of people who feel that way, who feel like, I feed myself and that's good enough. And I get sure. that. I wholly, totally get that, right? If you only have a certain amount of money to keep your family fed, you really aren't thinking about, is my neighbor fed? Is the guy on the other side worried about you? Right? You're not thinking about those things because you're just trying to keep yourself alive. But then I know we have a whole other group of people who were like, what? There's caviar in the trash, you know? And they're just like, right? Like, that's not my problem. Those people should work harder. They need to do better. They need to make more money. They need to move to a place that's got better food and things like that. And it's like, oh, come on. Those are just not options for people. That's just not an option.
I mean, touching on that, coming from like an HR standpoint and seeing really the other side of that, I'm absolutely the person who's had that mindset of like, oh, work harder. You stay up all day, you stay up all night, you just gotta hustle and you'll make it. And it's literally not even possible to do it. I've seen people work 60, 80 hours a week, still not be able to buy the things you need. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Nobody should work that much and like still not eat at the end of the day.
Sure.
And so being on the other side of that and just seeing story after story after story of help, I need this, I need this, and looking at people's schedules and they're working more than I am. I'm just like, this is absolutely, you should have food. Even if it's just your three kids, whatever, you shouldn't have enough money to even buy the food. And the area where you live should serve the food that you eat. That's also a really huge problem that I, like, firsthand learned over Thanksgiving this week and had a full meltdown in the store because we couldn't find, what was it, collard greens?
I think so. I think the collard greens.
Went to a regular store. It's full of produce. I won't say the name because I'm still quite angry. And we went in there to find greens. We found everything else. And I'm just like, this store is in a predominantly, you know, diverse area. So they should have collard greens. None. Not a thing. And of course, you know, Thanksgiving, it's pandemic. I'm over it. We're having no time in the store. Because I just need this. So we actually ended up, driving all the way out to town?
Like, what? You're like, let's just go somewhere else. But, like, that's a privilege in and of itself that I can go visit three stores, right? It wasn't too long ago that I was riding my bike to work and then hopping on the bus to get back just because I was too tired to pedal home. Like, I was hopping on the bus. Like, there's, you know, now I have transportation, right? Thank God, thank everything. But like, not a lot of people have those options. They just don't have it.
There's excitement over there.
The other thing is that, you know, I've met people who don't have a car or share the one car. You know, you have the opportunity to go to one store and it needs to have the food that you eat in it. You know what I'm saying? Right. So that's just like infuriating to me, where you're just like, I've got $3 worth of gas in the tank. I've got to feed my kids. I go to the store and they don't even have what I need. It seems like.
We were just in a meeting last week and we were talking about one of the areas that we want to work with on the east side of Detroit. And in that specific neighborhood, they tallied it up and it was about 90% of the people who live in that community only make $15,000 a year.
And it's not even laughable. It's just like, how do you live?
You don't, right? You don't, because there's something that you're missing. You're either missing life-giving nutrients, right? Mm-hmm. You might be missing a bill. You might not have transportation. There's like so many other factors. Like when you meet somebody who is food insecure, there's a really good chance that they have insecurities in a whole lot of other areas as well.
Right.
So, you know, when you walk up to somebody and you're like, eat right. Why don't you just go eat some kale? And then, you know, we like to look at it and say like, oh, well, in Black and brown communities, they don't want what we have. They don't want fresh produce. They don't want this. They only eat chips. They only eat this, right? They only eat chicken. Let's call it out. That's what people say.
If you didn't eat so much fried chicken, you wouldn't have diabetes.
Exactly. Oh, geez. Right? But then you think about it, it's like, okay, but if I can only walk to Popeye's And then when mm-hmm. I walk past Popeyes to get to the supermarket and I walk in there and all the produce is bruised or dying or mm-hmm. rotting. So am I going to go get the hot Popeyes with the fries? Is actually going to, you know, I know that this isn't going to be rancid, right? It might kill me in 30 years, but it's not going to kill me today. If I go eat those spoiled bananas or I spend my money only buying one type of produce because that's all I can afford. Okay, well, I couldn't get milk. I couldn't get eggs. I couldn't get any of these other things. And so it's like, yeah, we can jump to food apartheid if you like. We can talk about that.
But yeah, sure.
It all plays into it. These are all really just examples of food apartheid because mm-hmm. in the same way that our housing developments and our property is redlined, so are our grocery stores. Right. And they're set up based on I used to say that supermarkets were set up and had the food inside that was based off of the income of the community. And that is so it's far from true. Right. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of independent grocers. There's a lot of grocery stores who go into Black and brown neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. this might be the same store that same Black man, Black woman, Indigenous woman could not buy, right? So they probably weren't afforded the same opportunities to even purchase the store or purchase the property to turn it into a grocery store. So someone else who's not even from the community, someone who's from the outside, who's not local, is going to come in and they'll buy the space and they build it, right? Grocery stores are good. So we say, yay, grocery stores here. That's fine. We don't care. Just feed us, right? And then they come in, but now it's full of a bunch of food that I don't eat. Mm-hmm. It's full of a bunch of food that, due to distribution issues, is probably rotted. It's full mm-hmm. of a bunch of food that is priced at a price point that I cannot afford.
Oh, so
it kind of doesn't matter that the guy from outside the neighborhood came and brought us a grocery store because every time I go in it, I'm just reminded that there is a systematic problem with our food. Mm-hmm. There is a racial problem with our food system. So that's kind of like, yeah, we can talk about putting grocery stores into places, but if we're not thinking about how is this store relevant to the people who are going to patronize it, mm-hmm. then it's a moot point.
Sure.
And so,
and the people that already live in that community weren't able to purchase that land and make an investment in a grocery store. So,
Some of that money is also
who has not, the money.
Right. It's not even going back into the community, right? So, you see a lot of divestment coming out of neighborhoods straight up just through our food system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now there's a lot of talk about what happens to vacant land and to vacant lots in urban communities. And a lot of that land is being opened up to buy to be turned into mm-hmm. farmland. But if you are a black or brown farmer who might not be able to afford that land, now, you know, that's not available for me. Or let's mm-hmm. say I've been living in this neighborhood for 50 years. This home has been in my family for generation after generation. And the house next to us was severely, you know, the neighborhood is severely underfunded. And so we had to tear down the houses next to us. Okay, now we've turned it into a vacant lot. Now that lot is open for someone to buy it. And now it's either at a price point that I can't afford or for whatever reason, it's not available for me to purchase. So mm-hmm. now someone else from outside the community is going to come in and buy this land that I've been sitting next to for 50 years and I can't even purchase it to grow food on it. So for that's sure. like a whole other, like when we look at our communities and we look at community resilience and like ultimately Finnegan's Farms is a community resilience firm. That's what we do. We go into mm-hmm. communities and make them resilient around sustainable agriculture. And so look at that, right? Now you're basically just coming into an area that now looks like it's been taken over by a natural disaster, right? And you're not even going to take the necessary steps to make sure that the people who are living in the community can add to it and create an economy, right? around that land, around that food, all of that. So
yeah,
there's so many issues. Like I said, it's you need a holistic approach. But as I mentioned, food apartheid, again, these are all examples of that. So you could go to one grocery store, it's got everything in it. I know we mentioned this. You said that there was two grocery stores you went to. One of them, you were like, ooh, this is so nice. Look at this fancy cheese section. And you were saying, right? Like, the fancy cheese section is lit. But the one neighborhood, the fancy cheese section, the cheese is this much money. But then when you went to that same store, to the fancy cheese section, right, on the other side of town, you were like, wow, this cheese has been marked down significantly. It's the same stuff. Right. And you're like, I wonder why. And remember what I said? I'm like, you know why?
That's what it is.
You know why? Because the people who are eating this, I'm not coming in here to buy fancy cheese when I need to buy eggs.
Right.
I'm not coming in here to buy those things when I need to feed my family. And I shouldn't have to choose, right? Like I said, we want to exercise healthy food as our birthright. Mm-hmm. So I shouldn't even have to choose between buying eggs and greens and fancy cheese for my family. I should be able to get all of it because I live in this neighborhood. I pay my taxes and I put everything that I can into it. I should be able to go to my grocery store and eat what I want.
Do you say you pay taxes?
I do. That's pay my taxes. And I'm like,
we have to like take a sidebar. That's our number one quote here. Whenever we don't like something, you say, I'm a tax-paying American. You know, just try using that every day. I'm a tax-paying American.
I'm a tax-paying American.
Yeah, so we just can't. It was something that I personally couldn't look at anymore and not do something about. So we do. We try and jump in on, like you mentioned, on three different levels between growing, teaching, building, starting out by just helping communities grow fruits and vegetables, helping, you know, talking to you about getting your garden started, no till methods, no dig, helping to really give back to the earth, but also teach people how to grow food by using resources after requesting permission. Using resources sustainably and responsibly. That's our mission when it comes to us growing. And then we mention our teaching as well. So like we teach our classes on how do you do those things. Teaching community building, community care, taking care of the person next to you. There's if we have a community garden, a shared community space that is shared ownership of this space, we can take care of each other through that. We can build our own economies through that. And then, like, our biggest thing would just be our market builds that we do. So that's, like, our biggest build. So if we're doing, like, grow spaces, greenhouses, community community gardens linked to food share programs, things of that nature, because we believe that everyone should be able to That's our big thing, because the reason why I brought up the market build is because the way that we do it is, you know, we partner with bigger organizations or just community members who want big, you know, cooperative owned markets, community owned markets, community farm stands, things of that nature. And so when we do that, I mention it because it's community specific. So one thing that we run into is one thing is like people like to talk about the food system itself. And so there's a lot of communities that actually don't want to be a part of the food system because they have been discriminated against. They have been left out of that question, either from the growing perspective, from the laborer perspective, from the eating perspective. One of them, they just haven't had access. And so they're kind of coming to us with new ideas, saying like, we actually don't even want to be a part of the food system. Can you teach our community how to be self-sustained? Yeah. You know, how do we
really cool.
Yeah. So then we started to look at hosting pop-up spaces inside of our farmers markets and grow spaces. So all of our markets that we build all have a growing space. They all have a greenhouse, hydroponic house, one or the other. So some people have chosen to go the, what is it called? The greenhouse route with raised beds, and other people want to use hydroponics, but they have spaces set up, offices and things like that, that they've already, you know, they've said, this is what we want to build. These are our blueprints. How do we do this? Because we want to do our own stuff. We want to grow our own food, sell our own food, have our own markets, do our own thing, because the system has neglected us. And so that's kind of, we were like, yeah, we can help you with that. That sounds like fun.
That's one thing I saw on your website too, with even having food pantries too, and soup kitchens and things like that, being able to grow their own produce so they know where it comes from. It's fresh. It's right off the vine, essentially. And you're getting high vibe, high quality food instead of, you know, a box that perhaps, yes, it would have gone to food waste. But thankfully, yes, it escaped food waste and went to a soup kitchen. But that was a box that was intended to go for food waste. That is essentially a secondhand product that was deemed not pretty enough, or not sought after, or maybe it's just turning. Yeah. It's the leftovers, and no one deserves that.
And there's nothing wrong. I think that a lot of those programs that are put together, like some of the ones that just send you a box of ugly food, like ugly produce and
sure.
stuff. That's amazing.
I think that's kind of cool.
Amazing, because it does get rid of a lot of food waste. But I guess I was more so thinking about how people just go in their cabinet and get like a thing of canned corn, and then they get like some canned tomatoes, and you know, if that's all you have to give, that's one thing. But we also have people who are just like, I'm just giving the stuff to the pantry that I wouldn't even want to eat myself. And that's not what we're here to do, because people can have their own. They can make their own. Right. They can grow their own and have something fresh, close by, affordable.
Yeah. Not expired.
Yes.
So we just—it's obviously, as you can tell, it's something that's very close to our hearts. Yeah. It's something that's very important to us, because we want to get food on people's plates. Period.
Mm-hmm.
We've met a lot of people along the way, a lot of community gardeners, a lot of people who are just big in food activism. And I love them. I usually just follow them on Instagram and send them messages back. And it's really cool, because there's so many people who come together who are like, I'm waking up to this too. I see that this is a problem too. And we do a lot of teaching, and I'm happy to see that there's people who are reading it and understanding it. You know, for us, there's three parts to food apartheid. It's labor, access, and land ownership. Because if you look at land ownership, historically, that's where all of our wealth comes from in the United States. It's usually passed down through land ownership. And if you didn't inherit land from somebody, right, you have to go find some money and get your land yourself. And there's a lot of people who now live on generational wealth because they had land at the founding of our nation. And guess who didn't have land? Guess who had their land violently stolen from them along with their lives? Yep. Right?
Yeah.
And so when you look at that, if that's how our wealth is set up, I mean, if that's how our land is set up and our wealth is set up based off of our land ownership, how do you think wealth is set up? So then we flip over to access, right? So if we look at it in terms of just being able to get to things, how close are you to your nearest grocery store? What does it look like when you go inside? Are the floors dirty? That's access.
Sure.
You know what a dirty store looks like.
Yeah.
And you can even just go, like you'd mentioned. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, you can go to two separate stores in the same neighborhood, two of the same store on the opposite sides of a neighborhood, and I promise you there will be a difference.
Yes. When we talked before, just like you'd mentioned, I'd found that same chain, same line of grocery store in one town compared to the next.
Yep.
One town being more white collar, one town being more blue collar, as it usually is. Unfortunately, when you have two towns that grow right along next to each other, everyone settles in or is forced in, should I say, to their roles and their spots and their access. And yes, in one store, they would carry completely different food, goods, everything, ingredients too. But then, yes, as far as a different, but again, same chain, two different towns, even same chain, two different sides of the same town.
Yep.
Yeah. It is different. It's stark.
Mind-blowing. Yeah. It is a stark difference as far as cleanliness and order and care and consideration. It is a harsh but necessary reminder for me when I live in a very well-kept, well-cared-for neighborhood, and then perhaps I'm on the other side of town or in the adjacent town, and I happen to go to that store on the other side of that town, and here's the bad part, and I will admit it. I forget because that's not where I live. I forget that there is that stark difference because I'm not exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are the same way, and it's not an okay thing. It is 100% not an okay thing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They need the realization, and they need to realize that there is that difference, and not even just to the point of, oh, this grocery store is really nice and clean, and this grocery store is like really not taken care of. What's going on? No.
Yep.
But that's why, and that's the problem. From my personal perspective, it's like we need to take it one step farther and not just wonder why is that gross, but understand why.
Yeah.
And how not okay it is for those that have access to that store and live there. I mean, it's the line you got to cross.
Ugh. Yeah, you have to think about it. Like, somebody owns this store. Mm-hmm. Somebody knows that the two of these stores don't look the same and that they don't have the same products and that one of them is hiking up the prices in a neighborhood of people that can't afford it. Like, somebody knows this is happening. And then the last part to food apartheid is just labor. And so we have to think about this. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to talk about it, but it's 2020. If we can't talk about it now, when are we going to talk about it?
Right.
So it's like our country was built on the backs of the forced labor of enslaved people. And so when you look at how labor and work and the idea of a job system is in the capitalistic United States, right? Mm-hmm. We were built on an industrial society of work, 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 work. And before we hit the Industrial Revolution, it was work on the backs of enslaved people and steal land from indigenous people. That's what we're going to do. And that's how we're going to make this work. And so now, because we have treated people as
labor, property,
as simply just workers, and not the beings that they are, we look at our food system in just on that first level of who is producing our food, who is growing our food, looking at our food wages. You know, you might go to the store and be like, you know, I'm thinking about it like, oh man, I go to this store and the peppers aren't good. I go to this store and the peppers are better. Before we even get there, the dude who picked these peppers got paid 50 cents today to pick them.
Right.
Exactly.
But
taking it one step further, I really saw this come out, you know, as we're at home watching news during this pandemic. But, you know, the people who grow food talk a lot of shit about the people who pick the food. They don't really want them here. They don't want them taking up our things. But then COVID hit, and those people weren't even allowed to actually pick the food. And we have a lot of farmers, you know, bitching. Like, who's going to get out there and do it? I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe you need to get out there because the man that you were paying 50 cents isn't allowed to be here. And you actually actively voted to make sure that he wasn't here to pick this food. But you need him.
Mm-hmm.
Your business has to survive if he's not here. And I think a lot of people really saw that. You know, it's one thing to just like continuously shit on the people that help you when they're not there and you're just like, oh my God, my whole world is falling apart because these people that I constantly talk bad about and we don't want them here, we hate them, we're taking our stuff, the country doesn't run without them. you know, and right. then we started what? We coined the term essential workers. The country does not work without us, but you won't get mm-hmm. any food. We can't eat food. You know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right.
But if there's no essential workers, we don't have any. That's the whole foundation of this entire country.
Yeah, it's and it's still present in that. And I think we've seen that this year. This never ended. This never ended at any point that people thought it ended. It's still here and it's right now.
It's turned yeah. into other things.
Yeah.
Shadow slavery turned into the work industrial complex. Okay. All right. That's what it turned into. And while we might not, while we are no longer enslaved by masters, right? While we are no longer enslaved sure. by other human beings directly or out in the open, because there are still people who are enslaved in the world.
That was a look. For those of you listening, that was a stern look.
That was a don't get us kicked off this podcast.
Nah, I'm not going to kick you off.
You know, if you
never.
Look at it, it's just like those systems that we put into place never disappear. And now they are just being presented to us as other things. So like right now, like I have on one of my favorite Finn Farm shirts. It literally says, the system is designed to keep us hungry. And the reason it says that is because it's literally like I mentioned before, there's somebody who knows where this food is going, right? Yeah, and sure. we have I grew up in the Midwest. I love me some farmers. I love being on the farm. I love doing all of that, right? I love that. But we have to really take a very holistic approach to our food system and how those things are created, distributed, all of those things. It's not just about land stewardship. It's not just about doing it in a sustainable way that keeps our climate together, right? It's about those things, but it's not just about those things. It's also about tackling things like racism in our food system that has gone on for so long that it's deeply ingrained into our plates. It's in our plates. It's in our pantries at this point.
I mean, there's really no reason that we can't like start from the bottom. Everybody can eat. Everybody can get paid. We can do it all together. I think before this year, everyone just had this like me mindset. If I pay them more, I won't make any money. And all of that. It's not true.
Sure. Yeah. It's just, I like that people are listening and are understanding. And I think that I like to talk about fated events because I believe that nothing just happens. Like, I think that people come together for a reason. And right now we are meeting a lot of people who think the same way that we do. There's been a lot of people just working with some of the people that we've been working with in Detroit have been there for over 30, 40 years doing food activism work in the city of Detroit. Or people beyond that who are like, oh, I just got started on doing this last week, but this is great. You know, I just figured out what this is. Like, you know, you're like, I just figured out what food apartheid is, right? So food apartheid,
sure.
really, just for a brief, you know, for those who are listening. It's really just calling out racism in our food system and understanding that our food system is built around keeping certain people fed and certain people hungry. And so we just really want to bring awareness to that and you know, help people who might be living under food apartheid to kind of wake up and see it. Because some people do see it, right? Like as a child, I could go into the grocery store. That's what I wrote about it. Like I mentioned that last article. We went into the grocery store with our babysitter at the time, and she took me to a grocery store maybe 40 minutes away from our house. And she was like, just grab the stuff and you can put it in the bags. Every single piece of fruit, veggie, whatever I picked up, it had no bruises. It was shiny. It was just like, wow, this looks like amazing. And I remember eating like a plum or something on the way home, thinking to myself like, what the hell? Well, and I was like eight.
I mean, we just thought it was normal, but you know, now that we're a little bit older, who takes all Sunday to buy groceries? We would literally get in the car, drive across town, go to five different stores, and there's specific things that we have to get at each store. I didn't understand until I was older why we had to do that, but it did not take all Sunday to buy groceries. if you live in the wrong area, it certainly it does. It matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was without having to take the bus.
Right.
Or walk.
Right.
And we used to hate it. Oh my God.
So, you know,
I don't know what the, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, like, I lived in the DC area for a little bit of time, and like, their transportation is, I would say, excellent. Or, I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of people in the DMV who are like, you're a dirty liar. It's not excellent. But I'm like, it is excellent. That rush hour traffic might, you know, put me up 2 hours, but they have a metro, and they have the bus, and they have all those things. And I would go and try to hit up the Trader Joe's, like, in enough time, as soon as I got out of class or got out of work. And then it's like, get to Trader Joe's, realize that lettuce is too expensive. I guess I got to go to the other store, hit the other store on the way home. All of that. And like walking through DC streets with all those groceries, with a backpack on, doing all that stuff. It's a burden. I'm walking 2 miles just to get somewhere, or like I accidentally missed the bus and now I got to walk.
But even just talking about what you said right there, the lettuce was too expensive. Do you guys know how lettuce grows? Like, there's no reason that you should ever look at a head of lettuce and be like, wow, I can't eat that this week. Because it's free, man. It's
free. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well,
it regrows.
Yeah, it does. We actually do that quite a bit. We'll take a head of lettuce and regrow it hydroponically. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, we'll just cut it down, use it for a salad, regrow that, cut it again, and be like, okay, let's go get another head of lettuce. But no, and I will say, I mean, you might have to bleep it out, but I will say, Trader Joe's, your lettuce is too damn expensive.
I think we can all agree that most things at Trader Joe's, that they may be tasty and fancy, a lot of it is too expensive. But especially the produce. The produce is what gets me, especially after talking with you the most, is that I can understand specialty items.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is a vegetable or a fruit grown in the ground, underground, on a vine, in a tree. And there are people that have to pick those. And there are people that have to plant those and care for them and ship them and all of that stuff. All of that. But it's produce. And like you said, it really is, that is the basic right.
Yeah.
It maybe not the fancy cheese. Maybe not, you hey, know, man, the fancy right, chips or crackers.
I have a right to that fancy cheese too.
You do have a right to fancy cheese, and don't you let anybody else tell you otherwise. Yes.
Well, I think about that a lot, where I'm like, I think I'd feel more comfortable paying, you know, offering my kidney for my produce if I knew that the company who was providing the produce paid the people who grew it and picked it,
right?
At least hourly, as much as I'm paying for this head of lettuce.
And you know,
there was a berry company that was kind of under fire a little while ago, that they had some of the worst working conditions before COVID, and they have like patches and farms and things all over the world. International Berry Company. Again, we won't name names, but you can Google it and it'll come up right away. They had some of the – yes, you already know. They had some of the worst conditions before COVID, but then when COVID hit, everyone is still packed in the fields. And that came to light maybe – I'm going to say maybe in June. I don't remember. But that it's one of those things. There's so many things you can care about. How do we care about every single thing? At the same time, it's so hard, it's so convoluted, but basic human rights.
Right?
Basic human rights.
I mean, that's the thing. It's not hard. This is all a mindset. And once you honestly break yourself of like, oh, it's so hard and we can't do this, it's really just so simple. It's so simple. It's a lot of work, and I don't think that anyone wants to take on the work to get it done. But once it's done, the system sustains itself. You know?
Maybe not even the why. Why is this a thing? But how can we do this?
Yeah.
We know. We understand. Are we willing to tackle the problem of fixing it? And it's hard,
like you said.
That is a reframe. Yes.
Yeah, thinking critically together.
Yeah, I like it. What was it that you used earlier? Constructively collaborating?
Oh, I was saying critical.
Collaborative thinking. That's what you said.
Critical collaborative.
There we go.
That's it. Because everybody has skills. Everybody has something that they can do. And it might not be food related. It might not be directly related to whatever it is that you feel your like activism or your mission is. People have ideas. People have solutions. And if we all just sat together and said, okay, what can you do? Right. One of my, the person that we use to help design our 3D buildings, that's our cousin who works specifically in like 3D CAD design. Right. Yep. And he's not a farmer at all, but he's like, I could design a greenhouse. Right. I can
sure.
Right. We, just a small little plug there. We do design all of our markets and farm stands using shipping containers. So we reclaim shipping containers to use them to grow food and have our market spaces. Well, you know, that takes planning. I don't have those skills. My background is in, in biology. I can tell you about the plant, but I probably cannot do all the very specific stuff. So it's been very helpful to just have a lot of different people who have a lot of different ideas, and we can bring them together to really come up with something meaningful. It's doable. And the reason I feel like, I think that the reason why the two of us speak in this way, while we're like, girl, this is easy, girl, you know, is because we are young, you know. I'm 24. She's 27. Like, we're not, we haven't been doing this our whole lives. I mean, most of my life, because I'm so freaking young, but.
Hey, I'm 31. I'm not old as dirt either.
Right, like, you know, like, I like to think about people like Fred Hampton, right, who was a really, really prominent. He was killed at 21 because he was a big prominent guy in the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party, a lot of people don't know this, really did start out helping a lot in food activism and food justice. The food programs that they set up, free and reduced lunch, like school lunch programs, all those things, feeding the community in a number of different ways. These were things that a lot of young people spearheaded, young people in the civil rights movement. Because we all understood, like, this is not a situation where we can just approach through food. We have to come through it holistically from a lot of different angles.
I mean, even just to add to that, it's usually the young ones anyway. It's us. That's who gets it done. When you go back and read history, you don't see, you know, the elders doing these things. It's us. You watch a movie and everybody in it is 50 years old, but it's us. I mean, our founding fathers were in their 20s, you guys. So we can do a lot. We can do a lot together. And especially now that, like, everybody's home and basically listening to all of this, we can really, like, mobilize, which is amazing.
Yeah. No, this whole experience has been awesome. Just from meeting a lot of people, but focusing on making sure that our approach is very community specific.
Absolutely.
So like I mentioned, we have some people who don't even want to be part of a food system. We have other people who are like, yeah, we just want a grocery market that is owned by us. We do want to be part of that. We want to work with more distributors in and around the area. So, you know, we can bring those. Oh, there's Finnegan.
Finnegan, the dog.
Bring all of those guys in and then say, okay, what do you want to do? But, like, my background is in research. So I did a lot of research through college and grad school. And just, go look me up somewhere. I'm sure y'all can find me online, publications also. But from that perspective, I learned that, like, one thing is, like, research takes a really long time. Research takes forever, which is why people are tripping about that COVID vaccine. But, you know, research takes a long time. And one thing that we don't have is time. We don't have a lot of time. I believe I read something that said we have a little bit less than 7 years before we can do any big sustainable changes that are going to protect us from basically just all the issues that are happening with climate change, right?
The earth is falling apart.
So it's like we really don't
have time.
So instead of us coming into a community and kind of like going door to door to do more so, I would say, case studies. We do more of connecting with the people who are already there. You know, that's a really big reason why we move away from the term food desert and use the term food apartheid, because deserts are natural occurrences, for one, but deserts also imply desolation, and these are communities full of life. So communities, beings that have been left behind, and that apartheid is what has left them to be forgotten, deliberately so, but forgotten. And so we focus and we go into the community and say, you've been here doing this food work for 30 years. What do you need?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because there's already people there. Like, I think it would be disrespectful for us to even come into the community and say, hey, we're setting this up for you guys. Figure it out. That's what everybody else does. This needs to be something, you know, spearheaded by the people who live there, because every community has different things. And there goes Sin.
And Finnegan.
And Finnegan, yes. But every community is different. And we believe that if we move away from even using the word system, right? So as we go to create new food ways, I would like to say, and new ways to create to build an economy through food, we have to focus on what it is that the communities actually want, because that's something that was completely looked over the first time we did this, right? So if we go to the people and say, you've been doing this work, and they say, yes, we have been doing this work, you know what we need? We need a mobile food pantry. We need a mobile food stand. You know what we need? We just purchased that vacant lot. Can you help us turn that vacant lot into a community garden? Because we want to start a food share program in our neighborhood. Oh, hey, we just bought that house over there. The neighborhood owns it. It was dilapidated. Now we're coming in. We've reclaimed the home. Can you turn that into a community space for us? That kind of stuff. That's what we're coming in to do. Yeah. Because there's already people on the ground. People have their boots on the ground. They're already doing this work. We are joining this movement, and we hope to push it even further with the new and creative things that we come up with. But I was talking to somebody the other day who was like, communities don't need your help. And I'm like, you're exactly right. Like, communities don't need our help. There's plenty of people in these communities who live there who are like, we actually know exactly what we want to do. We don't need necessarily your designs. We don't need this. We just need somebody to listen, and for somebody to give us the space to do this. Someone who sees the vision, who's going to help us get this thing off the ground, because we want to invest in our community again.
Yep.
We want to make something that is ours, that we own, that we have collective ownership on. And that is a very, very powerful thing. And that is what drives us to continue to do what we do, because we can have large scale food security and have it be community specific. That is a very global thing.
Yeah.
But that's kind of more like, girl, that's easy.
I know.
We have seeds, we have soil, we have a place to grow it. Let's eat.
Mm-hmm. Real. Yeah, what's that? Where's dinner?
It takes you back to the roots of how our ancestors would have obtained food as well. Not necessarily in a grocery store, but taking care of themselves.
Just grow it.
Yeah, there's a number of you probably noticed on our page, there's a lot of African American agricultural pioneers that about just from, you know, the number one, probably if people think Black people agriculture, they probably think George Washington Carver, and then from there they think peanut butter, right?
I'll be honest. Yeah.
Right? But this is actually somebody who had patents for dyes.
Sure.
Right? Who understood how to do intercropping so that we could have better produce the next year around, or better cotton.
Yeah.
Things like that. They used to call him like a plant whisperer, I believe, because even then, still living in an area where there was deep segregation, right, born right at the tail ends of slavery, he was, George Washington Carver was still in a place where people wanted his opinion. They valued him because of what he could do with agriculture. But that same kind of thing happened when you look at like people like Booker T. Watley, and like I mentioned before, Fannie Hamer. A lot of those people understood what we could make through food because it was something that their ancestors were already doing. And so we also talk a lot about on our website, a lot of Black and brown people who have been called back to the land to grow, to respect it, to ask for its permission, to work with it in terms of divination, all of that, who might not feel that connected to the land because it was used to violently oppress their people or it was taken from their people. And so they're like, I don't want to be a farmer. I don't want to work in the dirt. That's a dirty profession. That's something I don't want to do. But I believe that there's a lot of people like us, Black and brown, even outside of, you know, people who aren't Black and brown, who probably do feel very, very much so called back to the land because they understand that turning back to the earth and nourishing her, but then also, you know, being very respectful in what we do with her and then using that to be a collective resource for us in a very holistic way is a lot, you know, that's very different. That's something that we can all do. And that's something a lot of people are starting to understand more. I think part of it just came because everyone was cooped up in the house and everybody wanted, you know, people started planting things again and
putting
up house plants and stuff. And there's, I heard something, Leah Penniman from Soulfire Farm. If you don't know who that is, please look her up. She's amazing. She talked about how there is a connection. There's like a spark when you put your hands in the soil. There is a calling back to the earth when you run your fingers through that and you touch the things that you grow and you eat the food that you grow and you become one and you put that sunshine back on your plate and you spread it around. There's so much power in that. And that is what we want to bring people.
Oh, yeah.
That is what we want to keep returning to because I'm not ashamed of that, right? Like my people were enslaved and after that they were sharecroppers and farmers and things like that. We were people who worked the land and it is a sacred, sacred thing to be someone who can work and commune with the land. And it is not something that should be taken for granted. It's very sacred work. And so a lot of people can do that. A lot of people want that. A lot of people have that feeling. And so we're just like, hey, we feel it too. Let's do it. Let's do it. We can go back to that. We can build our lives again through healthy and sustainable food. We just have to open our eyes and understand why this system works the way it does. Who set it up to work the way it does? And how do we either create our own outside of that or how do we maintain our own little corner of it, essentially?
Sure.
When we've been so often left out of that picture. Mm-hmm. And I would also like to mention that it's not just Black and brown people too, right? Mm-hmm. This, when it comes down to it, that we're looking at an economic disadvantage. So even if you're someone who is not, you know, even if you are a white person, right? You could be like, I'm experiencing a lot of those things. I think a lot of people when COVID hit experienced insecurities in ways that they didn't even know existed.
Oh my God.
Things that a lot of Black and brown people were living in daily, grew up in, are used to living in. A lot of people experienced that for the first time this year. And now their eyes are kind of open like, yo, like, this isn't working.
Right. And it took being able to or having to be in those shoes and those situations to realize that other people live in and have lived in those for their entire life.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's a big wake up this year for multiple things.
It's hard. It's a hard realization to come to. To see that firsthand, to experience it is very difficult. I always like to think of it, I guess I think of it in terms of like, we had adults who experienced that for the first time this year. We had kids who have been born into it. And they experience it on a day, on a daily scale, right? They see it every day. And they're like, oh, you guys are just not figuring out that we're hungry? Okay, come on.
Right.
Well, let's get to it. Like, yes, let's eat. So... Mm-hmm. We want to be there for those people. We want to be there for people who have walked there. The two of us have experienced all types of insecurities, you know, moving homes to just, like we mentioned before, going all over the place just to get food, to make sure that it was good food in the house.
Sure.
My personal experiences, right? Like that life that you live after you leave home, right? Like, are you putting gas in your car? Are you eating every week? Do you have enough money to get to work every day? Right? Mm-hmm. Things like that, like experiencing hardships firsthand, either growing up through it or just experiencing it as an adult. It's like, no, people live like this, but those hardships have only made us more relatable to the communities that we want to continue serving, right? These are people, sure. This is where we came from. So that's definitely been helpful. And I would challenge anybody who's had those hard experiences this year, or people who don't know what's going on, one, definitely check us out online, but also I would encourage you
to shameless plug.
take that pain, take that weird dissonance that you're feeling and turn that into something productive. Because I promise you, if this was the first time you were ever hungry, there was plenty of people who've been hungry who would love to create a sustainable option with you. So take that feeling, take that sick feeling in your stomach of like, I didn't know that this existed. I didn't know people were living like this. Take it and do something with it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Your message is so heartfelt and so honest and so powerful. And I really feel like it's going to help a lot of people just wake up and then do something with it. Like it has to turn into action. Like you said, take that discomfort and turn it into your fuel to give back to your community. After we'd talked, I mean, I was rocked. And I messaged my friend that works for Food Corps and I said, what can I do? What is already here that needs awareness, that needs help, that needs maybe it's monetary help? And if I can't give that, can I give those people a platform so that perhaps other people that can help monetarily can do that? And it comes down, you're doing this in your community and nationally, you know, when COVID allows us to go out into the world and do all the good things, it comes down to what we can do to our community. And like you said before, that left a mark on me a lot. There are already people who have been doing this work and they just might need more voice, more platform, more innovation, more help. An episode that I recorded earlier today, actually, he said, you know, sometimes you have to find your who, not your how or your why, but your who. Who is going to help you do this?
Yeah.
And you are two people and three people, Dylan too, that are here to help and are here to make your community better, inspire others to make their communities better. And you added on this season to what you're offering, and that is a pantry sponsorship too, which is something that you guys are doing directly, but that I think a lot of other people, if they have this dissonance and if they have this discomfort and they're wondering what they can do, that is you know, a very meaningful gesture that's also very easy to do. Again, it's nice when action goes in with monetary donation compensation. And like you said, like the quote said, it's not charity, it's a basic human right. Yes. That when matched with action is going to go a long, long way. Do you want to talk a little bit? I have it written, actually. I was indeed prepared. Your Fill a Pantry and Collective sponsorship. You have a couple different options of essentially sponsoring and filling a family's pantry. And then for those who may not be able to make that, I still think very affordable yet generous contribution of $25 for a family of 1 to 4 and then $50 for a family of 5 to 8. Mm-hmm. But if those are not in your price range, every little bit helps in this idea of community. You have a collective pot, if you will, that is going to go to continue to sponsor pantries. This is something that people can find on your website, and also something that people could find and perhaps, if it's not there, create in their own communities too.
I think steal the really idea. Cool thing.
She told you to steal it. Now run with it, people.
I mean, and if you do not want to steal the idea, go ahead and sponsor a pantry.
There we go. That can be found on their website.
As small as I think our smallest donation right now is like a dollar. So for, it's starting at a dollar. It's like, if that's all you have and you want to help somebody put, you know, put some food in their pantry, go ahead. But yeah, for a family of one to four, we mapped it out about $25, just because once it goes through like our processing system, I think we take like a smaller, there's like a smaller thing that comes off it, but it's like totals out to like $23, and then you throw some tax on it, that all takes care of a family of one to four. And then a larger family would be about $50. Mm-hmm. And so then, so we had other people who were like, I want to help, but I don't really have 25, I only have 20. We were said, okay, girl, throw it in the pot.
20 still helps.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Love that. And then outside of that, we just do, you know, if anyone wants to sponsor a build, if they want their community to have something sustainable, contact them.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah, we
operate. And you guys can be found at Fennigan's Farms. And I do need to make a distinction on how to spell it. F-E-N-N. F-E-N-N-I-G-A-N-S. Farms.com, because there is a Finnegan's Farms out there, and they have CBD, which is one of my other favorite things. But Finnegan's, if you need it for phonetically, F-E-N-N, Finnegan's Farms.com, and same on Instagram too. They can see your beautiful quotes, which, yes, please keep putting them out there. People are reading them. At least I'm reading them. They make me happy and inspired. So
I'm happy you're so inspired.
Yeah, maybe
truly.
Let me go ahead.
I sent a voice message to my friend. It was a visceral reaction. It really is, because, and like you said, you have to find that dissonance and you have to do something with it. You know, maybe you sit with it for a day or two and decide how you feel and what you can do, but then you take action on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call it, who do you fly for? Like, if you, you know, you get, like, who are you going to go above and beyond for?
Yeah.
Who do you work this hard for? So, like, who are you going to work that hard for? Who are you going to go up for?
Yeah.
I like that. You have so many good quotables that are just, they're laced with so much fire.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, like, I love it.
You
I
need
love
to
it, love
try
it.
Living with her. She wakes up like this.
I do.
She, yes, it, I feel she like rises in the morning and she's like, oh, I've spoken to the universe and this is the knowledge we have. And I'm just like, okay. That's new.
I definitely do not feel like that, right? Like, I was born in 96. I'm the tail end of, what is it, Generation Y? What is that? I'm a millennial.
Oh, gosh.
Something. You know, people usually tell me.
I don't think you're a millennial. I think you're the next one. I think you might be. Are you Z? I don't know.
Dirty Gen Z.
No, I must be Gen Z. But, you know, I think about that too. You know, a lot of people my age, really, you know, we get on social media and we're like, wow, we don't have a Fortune 500 company by 30. If you don't have two cars, you don't have a house. If you still live at home with your parents, right? No matter how affordable they might be, people like to think like you're not successful, you're not doing this thing. That was something I had to come to grips with. It was like,
sure,
moving from being in a suit every day to being literally covered in dirt every day.
In our
That's
sweatpants.
Different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't really think about it that hard. I guess I just wake up and I'm like, well, these are my thoughts. Let's do it. And this the look I get from her, and she's like, let's go.
I'm like, okay.
I love it.
You just
but she it. Says, let's go. She doesn't say, calm it down. She says, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Every time. I think that's a sister bond. It doesn't matter what crazy thing she's up for. I'm just like, all right, like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's be safe. But
yeah. And I think that by far, this is probably the best, most wild thing I've ever come up with. So it could be worse.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for your passion, your energy, your time, your thoughts, your wisdom that you've dropped so much of in this episode. I am inspired. I am fired up. I'm like speechless half of the time. And
wow.
thank you so much for doing this and agreeing to be on too. It's been an honor to get to share your voice and what you're doing. And
thank you for
I can't wait
us.
To see where you guys go.
Thank you for even having this platform, right?
You are so welcome. Gosh, of course. And, you know, it's one of those situations we're all kind of in a weird, I feel like we're all taking a gap year this year. Oh. And it's, in the future too, I can't wait to see what you guys do and how this grows post pandemic to do even more good and get out there even more. And listeners, guys, please go look at the good stuff they're putting out on YouTube and on Instagram,
get your classes.
Yes, get inspired. That's one of the best things we can do, especially as here in the Midwest, as both of us are, all of us are, it's getting gloomy. And that inspiration, sometimes that comes intrinsically, and sometimes we got to seek that out to find that intrinsic passion and joy again. Yeah. So thank you for lighting that.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're having trouble finding it, do what we do. We make sure to take at least a 15-minute walk every day, no matter how cold it gets.
Bundle up. I already told them we're walking in the snow. Mom's got to have some air.
Get that time in the sun.
Yep.
You know, take care of yourself as if you were a plant. Water yourself. You know, give yourself space to grow.
That's it.
And see what comes of it.
I love it. Okay. Love it.